Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. Brought us here, Jack.
The island.
They've attacked us, sabotaged us, abducted us, murdered us. We're not the only people on this island, and we all know it.
So I guess I'm out of the book club.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see in another life, brother. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back. We have to go back.
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, an expose rewatch podcast for season 3, episode 14. Lost. No, that sort of doesn't work.
The episode, Razzle Dazzle.
The Razzle Dazzle. It's a big episode where we learn some truths about the Cobra. Thank you for joining us. I have a question for you guys. It's about the TV show Lost. What other background Lost player that we've seen so far deserves a one-shot flashback episode? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I want to know about Steve, who is somewhere still mourning for Scott.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I would obviously advocate for poor, dear, departed, drowned Joanna to get her own backstory flashback. What prompted her to take that morning swim? I'd like to know.
And I'm Neil Miller, and on this particular ship, my ship, we fly the flag of justice, justice for Libby. We have long deserved and will continue to deserve a full Libby episode.
You are listening to a Lost rewatch podcast. Lost was a television show that aired for 6 seasons on ABC. We are rewatching it now that it's been like over 15 years since that happened. We try not to think about that part because we're enjoying the TV show. If this is your first time through Lost, fear not. This podcast is broke into sections. The first section we call The Calm, and we'll only be discussing things that have happened on the TV show Lost through season 3, episode 14, Exposé. The second part of the episode will be called The Storm and will include spoilers because we could talk about Exposé in the context of the entire series of Lost. Our interview this week does not have any spoilers. Am I correct, Joanna?
Yes, but there is a big extended spoilery conversation I had with our guest this week, Josh Wigler of Down the Hatch podcast, that will be released as bonus content for our listeners.
Ooh, bonus content. If you want access to that, you can go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you could support us by subscribing at a monthly rate at different tiers that give you different content. You can get the bonus interviews with the Storm. You can get bonus content from the three of us in the form of posts, live watches. Neil predicts the future somewhat accurately. And we also are still doing our Feels Like the First Time spinoff podcast, where Joanna introduces people to new pop culture, or pop culture they might have missed. It's probably not new to you, listener, but it's new to somebody. Joanna, where are you now in Feels Like the First Time?
We are now on the other side of our Terminator watch. My lovely co-host, Kristen Russo, has now seen 3 Terminator films. And she texted me last night. She watched the last one in our watch. I didn't watch it with her. She watched Dark Fate. She texted me that Dark Fate is her, is she thinks empirically the best Terminator movie.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it was like
an interesting episode.
It was in all caps. There I said it, and I told her she was bananas, and she insists that I'm the bananas one. So I think she's determined it is definitely the gayest of the three that we watched. We watched Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and Dark Fate, the Linda Hamilton trilogy. So Chris and I will be chatting about her impressions, her hot takes. And yeah, that's just like a fun thing that we do. You should join us. We've created our own like special Slack just for the live watches. And that's been really fun for Terminator because we had Buffering listeners, that's Kristen's podcast about Buffy Vampire Slayer, and Storm listeners co-mingling in a live watch. It was delightful.
It's a live watch crossover event.
It was amazing.
Wow.
So yeah, so you can join our Patreon at any level to get access to those episodes and access to that Slack where you can hang out with our listeners and the Buffering listeners as we watch some of these classic films. That is not the only way in which you can hang out. You can also obviously join our Patreon. I just said that, but you can join our Slack and hang out with Neil every day and watch Black Sails. You can email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. You can tweet at us at stormpodcast, or you can go to our website, stormpodcast.com, and sort of see the latest calendar of events. And you can also leave us a review. This review comes from Manly or Manly. And this person says, 5 stars, very good rewatch podcast, but beware. They are ruthless capitalists who will take all your money. I was directed to the show after my friend excitedly told me that her second favorite podcaster had interviewed Damon Lindelof. Okay, we're going to put a pause here. I want to know who that person's first favorite podcaster is and why anyone bothers to say that I'm second. Anyway, okay. Not one of her favorite, but like
right, second.
Second.
There's
definitely
a list.
Second.
There's a list somewhere we'll never see.
So as a big time fan of The Lost / The Leftovers / Watchmen, I obviously decided to take a look. Soon thereafter, I realized I was now officially listening to a Lost rewatch podcast. And after only a couple episodes, realized, yep, I'm now rewatching Lost. Then I found out about all the good bonus content, including some really great spoiler interviews from writers and cast members that is included in their Patreon. And now they are taking all of my money. Truly a brutal capitalist enterprise. But in all seriousness, this is a delightful time with three knowledgeable co-hosts who all bring a different kind of heat to the podcast. Lost was a show that really bridged the time between what TV once was to the beginnings of what TV is now, and this pod is great at exploring those complexities while still just riding the wave of a very entertaining show. An added bonus is that if you are rewatching and, like me, decide to make sure you listen to the pod episode before going to the next Lost episode, it gives the Lost episodes a chance to breathe and prevents too fast of a binge so that you won't get time to really sit with some of the big moments. I'm just finishing season 2 now, and I'm excited to actually get caught up to the week-by-week cadence of the podcast and return to that nostalgic feeling of watching Lost once a week. Good show. Listen to it. So thank you for that review.
Yeah. Manali likes our 2 hours discussion of a 45-minute episode to really help it like sink in.
I was talking to our guest this week, Josh Wigler, the great Josh Wigler, and he was like, oh, Joanna, you know, like our podcast episodes come in at like, oh, over 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever. I was like, you would make my co-host Dave's head explode with your with the runtime on your podcast. So I am jealous of their freeform sort of ways. All right.
We keep it tight over here on the Storm.
Yeah. Just an hour and a half every week. And then we got a couple emails. I want to read half of this email from Kate, and then the other half will be in the Storm. And Kate, I know, because she did a bonus episode of the My So-Called Life podcast that I did. So I actually got to talk to Kate, for that podcast, and the Boiler Room that I did with Kristen Russo. And Kate then started writing haikus every week for My So-Called Life. This is something Kate does on Twitter. She writes haiku movie reviews. She started doing haiku reviews of every episode of My So-Called Life for us. So Kate, I don't know if you want to do haiku reviews of Lost, I would not be, opposed. Anyway, Here's an email from Kate who writes, I've been meaning to write to you about Exposé for a while now and realized while listening to this week's episode on my run this morning that it's pretty much now or never. As Joanna might know from our interactions on Twitter, I'm a big fan of this episode and a Nikki and Paolo apologist. I was definitely not an immediate fan upon their introduction. However, instead, appreciating them for what they were after they were gone. The writers understandably thought that we needed more known quantities in our group of Losties, and it made sense to bring characters up from the background group than have members of the others defect and join them. That being said, the fan reaction of why am I supposed to care about these randos and why are they along on missions is also an understandable one. Given that vehement reactions, the writer's decision to take them out, particularly given the overall issues with the first six episodes of the season, was reasonable, and to be frank, Exposé was a perfect way to get rid of them and a fun episode all around. Nikki and Paolo's pre-island history is definitely extreme. Murderous diamond thieves, but a fun backstory given how everyone in our real world thought of them as useless and unnecessary. And seeing them in the background of or playing a very minor role in significant events on island is great, particularly since in certain situations they had inside information or the first discovery of certain things and do basically nothing with any of it. I think that may be a major reason I love this episode so much. One of my favorite things in media is when prior events are revisited from an alternative perspective, e.g. Back to the Future 2 is my favorite of the trilogy, and any flashbacks to On Island's occurrences are enjoyable regardless of whose flashbacks they are. But come on, the whole Paolo lies / paralyzed confusion, Nikki opening her eyes just as they start burying them, Nikki and Paolo being buried alive, a Billy Dee Williams cameo, what's not to love? I'm interested to see what you all have to say in your discussion of this episode, and I can't wait to listen. And then the rest of her email is spoilery, so we will read it later. So that's Kate amping the three of us up for Exposé, an episode that, spoiler alert, we all three really love. But before we get to talk about Exposé for real, let's hear about this. Listen, whether you're working from home, which we all are, or working on your fitness, which some of us are, you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to, and not what your roommate or neighbor or significant other or goodness gracious children are listening to. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you drop hundreds of dollars on a pair, check out wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know Raycon earbuds started about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and that they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands you know. But their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and more compact design that gives you a nice noise isolating fit.
Yeah, I mean, Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, perfect for pretty much everything, which actually is what I like about them. They sort of fit very nicely in my ear and are very comfortable all day as I switch between, you know, listening to podcasts, listening to music, doing a little podcast editing, stuff like that. It's great. And I like to walk around while I'm like listening to stuff and thinking and brainstorming. The Raycon headphones are fantastic for that. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during calls. The company was founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Melissa Etheridge, and Los Angeles Lakers star J.R. Smith are all obsessed with Raycons.
Now is the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/storm. That's buyraycon.com/storm for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. buyraycon.com/storm. Neil, what happened this week on the island? Everything, but I mean more specifically, what happened this week on the island?
So many things happened on the island this week. This episode, Exposé, was directed by our friend and yours, Stephen Williams. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, also previous guests on this podcast. It aired on March 28th, 2007, and it takes place on day 81 on the island. In flashbacks, we learn the origin story of Nikki and Paolo. They murder an Australian TV mogul named Howie Zuckerman and steal something very valuable from his safe right before boarding Flight 815. We'll go all the way back to the beginning. Boone and Shannon are there. Ethan is there. Arts is there. Jack gives his live together, die alone speech all over again from slightly different perspective, I guess. All the while, Nikki and Paolo try to recover their Russian doll MacGuffin somewhere out in the jungle. We then watch as Nikki and Paolo scheme in the background of the previous 80 days on the island. In present time on the island, back on the beach, Nikki comes running out of the jungle and promptly dies at the feet of Hurley and Sawyer, which prompts Hurley, Sawyer, and Jin to investigate her mysterious passing. They also find Paolo along the way. He's also dead. It becomes a whole mystery episode. The whole thing ends with the reveal that it was diamonds in the Russian doll, Sawyer was being sneaky, and Nikki and Paolo were only paralyzed by a swarm of mysterious spiders. It was being buried alive that ultimately killed them. Rest in peace, Nikki and Paolo. Fun fact about this episode, the slate board shown at the beginning of the episode while they're filming expose informs viewers that this is the fictional season finale of expose, and it was directed in-universe by Stephen Williams, who directed this episode of Lost, so it's like a Russian doll. Anyway, this week's calm question... Where does being buried alive rank on your all-time list of the worst ways to die? I will start by saying it's way up there for me, especially because not only had I seen this episode, but there's a whole like movie where Ryan Reynolds is buried that I saw at Sundance, and it was in a theater that was just very dark, so it was like the optimal bad way to watch a movie that's very terrifying about someone being buried alive. So it's very high on my list, but I'm curious to know where it is on yours, Dave.
I'm not super claustrophobic under most circumstances. So I'm going to place it on right where Joanna is on somebody's favorite podcaster's list at number two, below drowning, which terrifies me more. Mm. I feel like they're very similar ways of dying. You're like slowly suffocating, which puts them above things like, you know, being immolated or being eaten by some large beast, because at some point your body just gives like, this is too much pain, I'm going to shut down. But both the suffocating and the drowning seems like you're going to be painfully aware that's happening, and your body doesn't know what to do but panic, and that seems horrible.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Joanna, let's start this episode off by talking about the worst ways in which you could die.
That's a tough one, buddy. I got to agree with Dave. I would put it number two after drowning. Drowning is like really top of... Why, should we really be like revealing to people the number one way we don't want to die? That feels like...
Well, I guess it's more fate. Related to the show. Like, what's the worst way someone's died on Lost? So we've had drowning.
This is probably the worst. But we will say that like after a bunch of women got shot in the stomach, it's nice to see a woman die another way, I guess. I would rather die buried alive than have every bone in my body broken or whatever it was that happened to Scott Steve. So
Steve. Right on the beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's tough. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. So buried alive is pretty up there for all of us.
It's been up there for like a long time. I've been recently reading more for artistic styles, but I do this weird thing where I like traditional serials of the late 40s and early 50s. And I've been, you know, like listening to Gunsmoke as a podcast, but recently also I've been rereading some of the EC comics, your horror comics, your suspense comics, your two-fisted comics that are sort of like different types of action. And being buried alive is like right up there with werewolf for like easy horror. If you just like want to take something, it's like a man gets, you know, mad at a woman and tries to bury her alive. That's a pretty simple plot. Werewolves, though, never show up on the island that I know about. But being buried alive pops up here. And I kind of love that the whole feeling of expose the pulp series bleeds into Lost for this episode, and that everybody kind of goes with it. Joanna and I used to host a podcast about the Legend of Korra. Neil, you've recently watched all of Avatar The Last Airbender, so I think I could do this without spoiling anybody who hasn't seen Avatar The Last Airbender, but there's an episode called the Ember Island players in the third season of Avatar, where they go and see a play of somebody's idea of what they their adventure has been in the previous three seasons. And a lot of people also hate that episode, but that's also an episode that I end up loving.
It's the best episode. And so good.
And I think why both Expose and Ember Island players get a lot of hate, or got a lot of hate, is I could remember when Ember Island players came out. I wasn't watching Avatar at the time, but my friends were, and everyone was like, they're putting it out in like blocks, and there's going to be, you know, a couple weeks of Avatar and then like a movie sized block of like four Avatar episodes. And so this was like leading up to that movie sized block, which they knew was going to be the finale. And they're like, oh, the stakes are so high. What are our characters going to do? And they take time out to sort of poke fun at the show itself, and not poke fun in a way where it's like there's any sort of malice, but being like, hey, here are some of the weird things that you, the fans, have told us about the show that we've noticed are also like interesting things that our show just does. And, you know, to get to see those replayed back. I definitely now in the rewatch watching Expose in sequence see why people were mad, considering where we are in the mythology and the characters on the other side of the island. But as, you know, somebody who knows how Lost ends and does therefore isn't like held by the suspense of the mysteries that I used to be, Expose is fantastic. And I kind of wish there was one every season. Like, they gave themselves like a break every season to have a not serious episode.
Like a quasi-anthology episode almost. You know what I mean? Like, almost self-contained. I was reading some of the, like, you know, there's a lot of almost to this point apocryphal sort of mythology around Nikki and Paolo and the why of them and the where of them and what the original plan was, or what a plan they had at some point was. And one thing that I read was that what they wanted to do was do a standalone, kind of a standalone episode that was just from the point of view of a castaway that we hadn't met yet. And so, like, there is a version of season three where we don't meet Nikki and Paolo at all before this episode. And I'm trying to figure out whether that would have been better and like kind of even more fun and zany or not. Mm-hmm. I feel like if they showed up out of nowhere, even though we get like a flashback of them on the plane and stuff like that, or at least in the airport, I feel like people would have just like had some theories about it in terms of like mythological theories. They probably still did, but I feel like if they showed up out of nowhere, people would have been like, are these manifestations of the island, like one of these people? So, like, maybe you need to like establish them first. But I think that would have been kind of even more fun.
It would have been more like when they introduced Desmond, you know, he just sort of comes
right.
I mean, we know there's somebody in the hatch, but it's like introducing who that is like comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. And it could have been fun. I would have liked, I guess, spoiler alert that we don't, I guess the introduction of Juliet is like the closest we get to that, but like, we don't get this episode. I wouldn't have mind like a day in the life of someone who lives in Otherton, like an entire day in the life of like, what's it like to do that?
Yeah.
So stuff like that, you know?
Well, they kind of run out of time this season. When I was listening to the official Lost podcast for this episode, Damon's not even on it because they're working on the finale, and Carlton Cuse brings up that, like, you know, we had a whole Nikki and Paolo thing, and not only did the fans sort of react to them poorly, but we don't have time in season three, given what we want to do the full extent of what we wanted to do with Nikki and Paolo. So we, you know, found like this fun way to use them. And you know, next season, season four, not spoiling anything about the plot, is cut short by the writer's strike. And then after that, the seasons just get to be shorter because the show wanted it that way in order to provide more continuity to production. So it's like the time that you could have had a whole bunch of free episodes, like the type of television that bestows these type of anthology episodes, like your Star Trek's, Next Generations, or your Quantum Leaps or whatnot, like, not only were before heavily serialized television was really in vogue, but was like season one of Lost, where they had over 24 episodes of television to fill. And so as they narrowed Lost down and started to distill it down to its core story, there's just never a chance going forward to be like, well, let's do an episode from Vincent's perspective, which it seems like a winning idea from season one. But you know, they never get around to having that type of fun because we have to deal with our characters.
Well, it's also, I think this is, you know, when we talked about the, what they wanted from season, from the show initially, like what ABC envisioned for the show initially, this actually seems more in line with what they had in mind rather than like the big grand mythology. They were like, you know, adventure of the week on a wacky island.
Mystery island show.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you could see at least, or maybe it's because we've been watching a lot of Lost, but I could feel in the writing, the writer's room having fun with this episode. In a lot of ways, I think this is the first time that Hurley's been used as sort of like an audience surrogate so blatantly. But I'm thinking about the scene where they debate what Echo's "You're Next" really meant, which I believe was also a conversation that we had briefly in discussing that episode. But sort of like breaking down the outside perspective of Nikki and Paolo, and then in flashbacks, you know, placing them in previous events, seems like they had a lot of fun. They cut out apparently an episode that appears on the DVD where like Nikki's around during the event that turns the sky purple, and sort of what she saw. There was an episode apparently they scripted where Paolo would happen across Jack and Boone, Locke and Boone, digging up the hatch in the jungle and sort of not really know why. But this whole idea that they brushed up against things like the Pearl and Ben and Juliet, and, you know, Paolo heard the plan about Michael and then just did nothing about it.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah, let's.
Plan with Michael?
Yeah, the plan that they totally had the whole time.
Mm-hmm. What was I going to say about that? And apparently there was one scene where Paolo finds Shannon's inhaler and just like throws it away that they wanted to shoot.
There were some bad
I'm sure they had like an enormous cork board.
Well, yeah,
full
I mean, that's
of,
a
like,
whole idea, right?
Yeah. What kind of nonsense can we have them do? But yeah, Paolo, like, is Paolo, like, I want to do Paolo antagonist check-in, right? Because, not because he killed someone and took their diamonds and whatever. Because he committed Dave's number one sin, which is withhold information. Paolo knew so much the whole time and content to work on his golf game instead.
He knew about the hatch.
He knew about Ben.
He could have warned them about that plane that was going to fall. He knew, Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, within the context of this episode, there's like a tragedy to how it goes out for Paolo, because the way he, like, the little speech he gives her as he's
succumbing
to paralysis is super sad.
I agree.
It sort of, in a very quick way, explains like the dynamic of their relationship. But yeah, I mean, I feel safe in saying that Paolo is also an antagonist. They murdered Howie on purpose. They did that on purpose, I think.
Howie, who is supposed to be murdered on purpose. Oh yeah, yeah. Howie, who's supposed to be like an Aaron Spelling type figure, right? But like, did you guys ever watch? Oh god, what was it called? I'm trying to remember. Hold on, because they describe Exposé as like Baywatch, but like more fun. And I feel like there was there a show called like Vipers? Hold on, I'm gonna find it. It was definitely a show I at least watched one.
There definitely may have been a show in that genre.
Vipers. It's not Aaron Spelling. Maybe this is not what I'm thinking of, but this is from 1993, so that's about the right time. Oh my god, Metro City was under siege from the crime wave that was begun by the Outfit, a crime group led in the pilot by a man known only as Mr. Townsend. Yeah, this feels like what they were going for.
They didn't get Billy Dee Williams, though.
No.
So that's why it didn't become successful, like Exposé.
Well, and that's the other thing, is like, if you're uptight about Exposé now, I would just encourage you to look to Hurley's review of Exposé, which is just like, it's just fun, man.
Well, also, I mean, it is true, at least for me, that this is an episode that I enjoyed far more on the rewatch, because it, I think the first time it came around, it comes out of nowhere in a way that it feels out of place with the rest of Lost. But going through it again, it really, it, like, you can just see it as like this exhale from the writer's room where there's like, finally, we're just going to do a fun one for a minute and then we'll get back to island stuff. And if you look at it like that, it's just a really fun little episode, you know, little nice little bottle episode here for Lost.
The ambition of it, the joy of it, like I'm a big, sure. I'm just a huge Exposé fan. I love yeah. this episode.
Yeah. It's a huge swing, and I think underrated during the show's airing for sure.
Imagine being a fan of Lost like we were fans of Game of Thrones, and seeing set photos and being like, Boone and Shannon are back. This episode is going to rock. And then getting Exposé and just being like, my expectations were set differently.
Well, that's that. I think one, a big mistake, because I think Cusin Lindelof said something about like, this will make Nikki and Paolo worth it. There was some like wording they used that was like, this is the big payoff for Nikki and Paolo. And it's like, no, don't. Under promise, over deliver. But honestly, if there had been an episode of Game of Thrones that was just their version of Ember Island players, which is like the Bravosi players, I would have loved that. I would not have been like, where's Daenerys and her dragons? I would have been like, give me more players. So like, I'm a big fan, but I do. I mean, I remember being annoyed by Exposé, and I remember believing that Exposé was like, along with like the second worst episode after Stranger and Strangely. But now I would put it in like top 10 of Lost overall for its like audacity.
It just definitely does not belong with some of the other mistakes we've already identified from this show, including Stranger in a Strange Land.
Right.
Like it's unfairly classified, I think, at the bottom there.
It feels sort of like a parody of a Lost show. Which I know because I watched Wrecked on TBS for its entire run. But, like, that's, like, it goes so big after, you know, like, really digging into, like, character motivations and why John's blowing up the shuttle. It's, like, murderous diamond heist. And you thought that was weird? Mysterious spiders. You thought that was weird? She's gonna open her eyes right before Sawyer throws dirt on them.
Yeah, I mean, if we rank this on like the list of characters the show had to get rid of for one reason or another, this is one of the better outs for a character that's like, you know, so like Mr. Echo, not great. Libby, bad. We needed more Libby. Ana Lucia, sort of in the middle because it's a great shocker. But this one, I feel like they do finally like. You know, the Nikki and Paolo, I don't know if Nikki and Paolo were ever going to be, you know, part of the main crew. And I think they learned that in season 3 about a bunch of characters. And this might be the most fun way to take them out. And also the most unnerving right there at the end.
I think something that sort of also works in its favor is the episode, even though it gives them backstory, never tries to give them more depth than we assume they had to begin with. Like, they have little schemes, but the schemes are, I found a toilet. Like, it's not, like, a huge scheme. Like, the other interesting thing that happens in this episode is Sun finally unravels the plot with Charlie, which I'd kind of forgot happened because Exposé has so much else going on. But that's been a secret that's been kept from since, you know, baby snatching. And that's, like, another example where we get to see complex characters react with the complexity we've learned exists for those characters. With Nikki and Paolo, it's like, it's nice that Paolo gets the speech at the end, but I don't think there's any time during the run of the show that I think they're not the bad guys of their own episode.
I'll disagree and say that I think the I think that's true of Nikki, unfortunately. But I think
Nikki's the worst.
I think Paolo, either because of Rodrigo Santoro's performance or just like some of the pathos that they wrote for him. But I would like point beyond the whole like, I was worried I would lose you, that's why I lied about the diamonds, which I believe him, by the way. It's that silent moment when he's like in shock from the crash, mm-hmm. and he's just like staring at the wreckage and he's covered in blood and Rodrigo Santoro is giving us face, face, face. And Keely Sanchez runs up to him and is like, bitch, where are the diamonds? Yeah. And he's like, who am I in league with? Who is this woman that I love? And yeah. why is she not experiencing the enormity of this thing that we're going through here. I think that's actually a nice bit of depth in the episode.
Yeah, I really think that Rodrigo Santoro does, I mean, definitely his best work of Lost in this episode. But this is, you know, it's actually some pretty good acting in this one, especially in that sequence. I think technically, on a level of like trying to recreate your own stuff, which is always dangerous. They did a really good job of recreating the crash from the pilot, that sequence, and sort of editing around it and, you know, shooting different things around it to put Nikki and Paolo in there. I think it's, you know, it's kind of a cheesy concept, but
I love it.
Surprisingly well executed. Although not so surprisingly, because it's, you know, Stephen Williams, it's Lost. They're doing great.
Yeah, using like original pilot footage, matching original pilot footage with new footage. The same for the like live together, die alone speech. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They just had to like reshoot the other side of the circle. So like Hurley, Hurley's there. It's fun to, a fun experiment. If you've been through Exposé a few times, which I have recently, a fun experiment is to figure out who's actually working on this episode and who's not. Like, I don't think Matthew Fox shot anything new. But, like, Evangeline Lilly did, just, like,
right.
a few gun discussions.
She had to bring her guns out.
Right.
Well, it's like, Shannon came to the island, but Boone, they probably just kept at the airport set. Because he doesn't pop up in the island, right?
Maybe. I feel like he's at the crash site, but that's just like
he stole the water
footage.
In the arts.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. He stole the water.
Arts comes back.
Boone stole the water. Remember when that was our biggest problem?
Remember how Arts comes running around the corner just saying that? I love this episode. I also love every time we see Boone and Shannon again. It makes me happy. So, and each person who crosses, like Arts, great. Ethan, great. Just love to see all of it. Like, yeah. This what a treasure box this episode is.
I would have thrown in one of the Taileys over Ethan. I understand why they want to not, you know, do that, and for probably actor reasons at this point, some of them wouldn't be as game to come back as others. But
I have an idea.
Ethan keeps popping up. Like, man, you were shot in season one.
I know which Taily it should have been.
Which Taily?
Libby.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, of course.
Why isn't Libby in this episode for reals?
Yeah. And like all the ways in which this episode, you mentioned this before, Dave, but all the ways in which this episode playfully interacts with things I'm sure people had questions about, like, yeah, the gun case, like, you know, why do certain people get to decide what to do with the guns and why aren't more people upset about that, and having Arce be like, The pigs are walking. Also, did you see what Arce keeps his spider in? The Medusa spider in?
A jar?
So he has an assortment of jars, right? He's got like a tennis ball container is like one of the ones and stuff like that. But the Medusa spider lives in a jar of peanut butter. It's a Jif jar. It's a Jif lid. So yeah. The peanut butter returns.
That's what happened after they ate the peanut butter.
This imaginary peanut butter tastes like paralysis.
Tastes like spiders.
Right? Because there was the... Before it was real peanut butter, it was an imaginary peanut butter.
It's true. Yeah. So, I mean, we just all agree. It's a great episode. I mean, once upon a time, if you were like a cool, hip Lost fan, you were like, here's my hot take. Exposé is actually really good. But I feel like it's sort of like a tepid take at this point, or maybe even like a cold one. Because I think a lot of people, like, when they rewatch Lost and they're not anxiously trying to figure out what's happening, they're like, what fun. And even a lot of our first time watchers who don't know what's going on were like, what a nutty ride. I really enjoyed it, right? You know?
I think so. You just got to embrace the chaos of
it. It's true.
It is a random one as far as it goes. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it's levity we need. And then also knowing it now in rewatch time, that we'll get back to it next week. So it's no need. It's nice to have that. I think Neil called it sigh of relief from the writers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're absolutely right. Like, if this episode hadn't come after The Man from Tallahassee, which is, like, so chock-a-block full of mythology, I don't think it would have landed.
The Emmy-nominated Man from Tallahassee?
Right.
Followed by Exposé, one with Billy Dee Williams in it.
Yeah, Exposé is like, hey, remember how there was an episode where every little detail mattered? This one, not so much.
Not so much. Don't worry about it. Matter of fact, you know a lot of these details, and the other ones are diamonds.
It is, I mean, it is hilarious. And Josh, our guest, Josh and I talked about this a little bit, but it is hilarious to me that Paolo found a hatch before John even got inside of the other one.
Mm-hmm. And never said anything.
That John is just like flinging his body against his closed hatch door, and Paolo's like, doo-doo-doo, there's a toilet in this one.
Yeah.
John was probably gooping Boone at that very moment. And it was all for nothing.
For nothing.
Stupid Paolo. I'm glad that spider got him and then he was buried alive horribly.
But let's talk about Michael. Okay, so Dave's whole theory is that Walt was inside the computer inside of mm-hmm. Desmond's hatch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my
Electro-Walt.
My counterpoint was that, no, this is obviously Mikhail or someone else posing as Walt in order to, like, lure Michael, find what the people care about the most and then use it against them in order to get them to do what you want them to do. That is Ben's MO.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, we see Ben talk about that and about using Michael. So in what universe are we still believing that Walt is inside the computer?
Well.
Wait, we're talking about.
Okay, so Ben. So we're. All right, so now we're adding a layer to this where it's like Ben. Walt asking Michael to come look for him is part of Ben's larger plan. So how did Ben convince Walt to do his electromagnetic shit?
To get inside the computer.
To get his father. That wouldn't be that hard. Walt's a kid. Ben's smart. He could have talked him into it. He'd be like, listen, we love your gift, Walt. We think that electromagnetic mind stuff is the future, and we just need you to get your dad to come here and sign some forms. That's what I think happened.
Okay.
It's like, well, I mean, first of all, if Ben wants to make Walt get into the computer and think it's his idea, that's within Ben's ability to
do. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would never doubt Ben's ability to do anything, honestly.
But also, I'm a little bit confused about timeline, because certainly he has this plan, but he hasn't gone and gotten himself in a Rousseau net yet at this point. Because isn't Ben in the armory when Electro-Walt shows up?
Let's see. There are day numbers. On
no, Ben gets into the armory after Michael leaves, because Michael comes back and he's like, you got a dude in your armory? What?
Oh.
So that happened on day 49, apparently.
Interesting.
Where thereabouts.
That's super long game. It's Ben, so you can't put it out of his capability. But that also means that he had this plan before putting himself in captivity for no reason.
Yeah, that's the tough one. Is like, what was Ben on his way to do that he got caught up in one of Rousseau's ropes, or did he go do that on purpose to get caught?
That's, well, know? That's long been the question. The question is, because day, that was day 49. Sayid finds Henry Gale on day 58. According to Lostpedia. Mm-hmm.
So it's like a week later.
Yeah, a week later. I mean, that's the whole thing, is like Henry Gale was only supposed to be a short-term character. So Henry Gale could stumble himself into Annette by accident. But Ben Linus never would, right? So that's a little like glitch in the Matrix that the Lost writers have to like just sort of hope we'll not think about too hard about.
Yeah, well, and Ben could have actually gone there for the reason that Henry Gale says, which is... He talks about Shepard and Ford and Austin in expose, but he says he's there to check out Locke. So maybe at that point he needed, you know, eyes on the ground.
He's got to get a look at this.
The new island prophet. Yeah. Either way, they're both, I think, equally possible solutions that Mikhail was typing to Michael, or that Walt became electricity and went in the computer and manifested words out of the other side of that computer.
Okay.
We can't definitively say either way, is all I'm saying. I'm not taking anybody to court over Electro Walt one way or the other. But I'm taken to court. I'm certainly not pleading guilty without a fight. All right. Let's go for some corners. Neil, we have some Giacchino corner coming up.
We do. This one, fairly simple title for the track, is Sweet Exposé. But also a fun fact in that the orchestral piece, Sweet Exposé, is shown being recorded by the Hollywood Studio Symphony on the April 10th, 2000 official Lost video podcast, which I don't... Did that end up on the DVDs, or is that still the video podcast? Still exists anywhere? Does anybody know?
I'm sure they've been archived somewhere.
Everything's on YouTube.
But yeah, I don't think it was on the DVD release.
So Sweet Exposé, which, you know, I guess that fits. It's not Giacchino's most ambitious work, but as far as titles go. But... it is sweet. It's a nice, it's a fun episode of Lost. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Let this episode be fun.
Yeah. Speaking of that, our Jungle of Mystery moment could be a lot of things that are salient, but I think the biggest mystery is revealed is the Shade was the Cobra all along. Because like Hurley said, they hid that for like four seasons. They're just shrouded in mystery.
Man, and Hurley got spoiled by the script. Man.
Got
be careful
spoiled
with
the script. After what, reading like most of a galley book that'll never be published. Hurley's really accumulating a lot of
he's like
island
the original
literature.
Internet message board guy.
Yeah, basically.
But he doesn't have access to the internet. He's just on an island.
You guys, I gotta post to the Shades the Cobra. I have the script. All right, the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award. Apparently, we have a debate, so we're going to vote. Neil says the plane, question mark. Neil, represent your fighter.
Well, I mean, if we're going to go with things in this episode that are implied to have fallen later, then I think the plane, because Paolo specifically, doesn't he call out the plane? He's like, I'm not going up there. That plane's going to fall.
And Nikki's so, like, oh my god, it's not gonna fall, Paolo.
Right. So I think it's the plane.
All right, and we'll have Joanna give the award to one or both of these. I'm going to go in like Neil was saying, we're basically we're implying falling in this because, you know, not a lot of non-spider paralysis falling goes on. But I'm gonna say Boone Carlyle himself, who is in the episode and then isn't.
Did Boone win this award when he originally fell, though? Can you win it twice?
I think we have. I think it's really cute and fun to give the Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award to Boone Carlyle. So don't fall down. Don't be like Boone. Don't fall down. Be Apollo and fall down from spiders, not from planes.
Yeah. Also, at least one spider died.
Well, I mean, like, down, Flight 815 also fell down, if we want to talk about things that fell down in this episode.
The Russian doll fell out of the sky and into the jungle.
It did.
And it was a pool. Apollo's Nicorette gum fell out of his pocket into the sand.
Yep.
I still like Boone. Boone it is.
Okay. Yeah, I vote for Boone.
Boone, the only multiple award winner.
Yes, so far.
Surely Locke doesn't stay on his feet the entire series. All right, Joanna, do we have an accident corner this week?
Oh, I forgot to look it up. So can we move on to something else and I will look that up?
Yes, we can. The Henry Gale Memorial Obviously a Lie Award comes very early in this episode, which actually doesn't have a lot of lies if you go back and look at it, just by the nature of it. But definitely,
I mean, Paolo lies, but I don't know about anyone else.
Nikki says to Zuckerman, "No, I'm not leaving Sydney. I love you." And then they murder him and they leave Sydney.
One of the all-time quickest payoff lies, too. Like, it's just like the next scene he dies.
Yes. Could have been a lot longer, as we'll learn in the official podcast check-in, which we will get. We could get to now. We could get to now while we're waiting.
Well, I'm ready. Plus, it was like, I really love that quote. I mean, like, this whole thing, we talked about this, but like, this whole thing is like, if an episode of Bones were like on the island, right? Like, it feels very like murder mystery procedural. And also, we didn't say this in the beginning, but the way that Howie Zuckerman talks about Paolo, that was a reference to the fact that
they talked about him being the whatever Tom Cruise.
They talked about Rodrigo Santoro being the Tom Cruise of Brazil, and so he's like the Wolfgang Puck of Brazil. that was a joke on that. Okay, so Jacob Witkin is the actor who is playing Howard Zuckerman, who is clearly sort of an Aaron Spelling type figure. Do we believe that Jacob Witkin, is he supposed to be Australian in this episode? Is that what he's doing?
I think so. Howie is Australian.
Tell me what you tell. Okay, you have to, because I didn't bother to go back and re-listen because I didn't realize we were doing an accent corner, and I apologize. But like, tell me where you think Howie's from and where you think Jacob's from. It's a two for this week. Neil.
Wait. Okay. So.
So you think Howie is Australian?
I think Howie is supposed to be Australian.
Okay.
But I think the actor seems more British to me. The accent, it doesn't feel quite right.
Okay, so a British actor doing an Australian accent. That's what you think.
Yes.
All right, Dave?
I'm trying to recall this in my mind's eye right now.
His ponytail is deeply European.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say the character is supposed to be Australian, but this guy is from the East Coast of the United States.
I will have to rewatch for what he's going for. But the actor, Jacob Witkin, is from South Africa.
Oh!
Ooh, a twist! An exposé-esque twist! So...
maybe it's South Africa. He
might be trying
to
be South African.
I don't know. It seems kind of Australian.
It's just like, anyway, if a South African ings for Australian, do they just hit a Kiwi?
Anyway, that's our Russian doll, nesting doll of accents in the accent corner this week.
Wow, this episode is so meta.
Joanna, keep it going with the Jungle of Kistery, where we get to nominate some people in this episode who get to kiss. I'm assuming at least some of them involve Nikki and or Paolo.
Last week, we neglected to put our poll up from our Kistery nominees on Twitter last week. We had some good nominees, though, and I figured like the three of us could just vote on what we think is the winner right now. Our candidates from last week from The Man from Tallahassee. I keep wanting to call it a different episode title from later in the season. The Man from Tallahassee. Our candidates are Ben and Locke, John and Ben's Fridge Chicken, Saeed and the Swing Set, and John and Explosives. I'm voting for John and Ben's Fridge Chicken, but what do you want to vote for, Neil?
I think I'm also going to take the Fridge Chicken.
Great.
Because
the Dave's vote doesn't count. So it's John and Fridge Chicken.
Democracy is fantastic. John and Explosives.
We called the election early because the East Coast
specifically
voted.
John and blowing up hashes, which is the thing John Locke loves the most.
All right, but our nominees this weekend, if you want to nominate someone for Jungle Kistery, you just need to join our live watches on Saturdays in our Patreon Slack. So we've got Arts and Spiders. That's from our listener Jack, nominates Arts and his spider
really
collection.
Really did like those spiders.
Mm-hmm. Paolo Nicky and the Spiders. That's from our listener Ganesh. It's a nice little thruple, Paolo Nicky and the Spiders. I really do like that moment when Paolo's are already paralyzed, but Rodrigo Santoro's trying to signal to her with his eyes that there's a spider on her ankle. And he's like, he's just using his eyeballs. Okay, sorry. All right. So Paolo, Nicky, and the Spiders, Sun's Punch and Sawyer's Kisser. That's from Heather. Usually men getting punched by women on the show win, so we'll see. But Sun's Punch, Sawyer's Kisser, a long time coming. But last but not least, this is my favorite. This is from our listener who goes by either Wafting Curtains or We Did Go Back. Either one, I really like both of those screen names. But that person nominated Paolo and Boone because, as you will recall, ooh, Shannon's like, hey, Boone, stop flirting with that Tom Cruise of Brazil over there. And I'm like, I'd love a show where Boone and Paolo ditch their ladies and slash sisters
maybe,
and go for each
maybe
other.
Maybe if Boone had hung out with more with Paolo, he would have not gotten into that plane.
I mean, he definitely wouldn't have died.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's our history, though. That poll will be up on our Twitter this week. Some spiders, some Paolo, some sun punches. So
Sun's fist. Mm-hmm. That is a great moment when she finally gets to punch Sawyer in the
face. I mean, she should have punched Charlie, too, while she was at it, but it's okay.
It's true.
I was Charlie's going through a tough thing at the time. I was just going to baby, you see.
Charlie at least confessed.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, also, I want to say we mentioned a couple weeks ago, one of our listeners thought every time we were saying Nicky and Paolo that we were saying Nicky and Paula, like it was one character, Nicky and Paula. And I will just want to say that, like, while watching this episode, when Sawyer is okay, by the way, so Sawyer and Hurley bury Nicky and Paolo. Charlie puts like two shovelfuls of sand on and then walks away. I don't know why he got out of burying duty, but he did. But at one point, Sawyer goes, R.I.P. Nicky and Paula. It sounds like Nicky and Paula is what Sawyer says as he dumps the diamonds on them. So, yeah.
Nicky and Paula so is definitely the name of her character on Expose. Was it Corvette?
Corvette's good, but Nicky and Paula's better.
Nicky and Paula is so much better.
You want to do book club real quick?
Let's do book club.
Book club, of course, comes courtesy of our island teacher, Dr. Arts, who knows about trajectories, but he also apparently knows about George Orwell because he references Animal Farm when he says, the pigs are walking. And that is from the moment in Animal Farm when the pigs learn how to walk on two hind legs. And in that scene, when they do that, there is a new law visible behind them on the wall. If you've never read Animal Farm, it's sort of it's an interesting read to go with hand in hand with Lost because it's about power and leadership in societies and humans and all that sort of stuff. But the barnyard pigs learn to walk on their hind legs, and the law written behind them on the wall says all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And so I think we can say that everyone who got to take a shower in the hatch is a little piggy on their hind legs, more equal than the other animals on the island.
Fair, but also Paolo found a bathroom. Didn't tell anybody.
We found a toilet.
Paolo is the little piggy that can, like, run on two legs for some reason and is not telling anyone.
Not telling anyone that he's learned that.
If someone had bothered to tell Paolo that there was a man in their armory, he could have walked down and like, oh, yeah, that's Ben.
No, oh, that's Ben.
He's evil and he's another.
Right? That's why they didn't tell anybody.
He told this woman to get this guy named Tom to move the plane, so I couldn't get in my bathroom anymore.
She thinks Jack is cute, so I look forward to shipping that in a future episode of this television show we're a part of.
Where's Libby? We actually know, because this flashback takes place in the time period. We know Libby's on the other side of the island for most of this.
Which makes it even sadder that we were robbed of her presence in this episode.
Indeed, it would have been so much easier. All right, the official podcast check-in, Damon Lindelof's not on. But good news for both my podcast co-hosts this week, Horowitz and Kistis were on. So we got, who wants to?
I want to be Adam.
All right. Who wants to read Ed?
All right. Neil? I will be. Oh, man. Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm Edward Kitsis.
Yeah.
You get to be Eddie. I'll be Adam.
And yeah. I will pick up from Carlton Cuse a bit more about how Nikki and Paulo could have turned out. Here we go. Yeah, we'd always been, you know, we'd always had talked about basically how we wanted to introduce Nikki as an actress and basically play a scene from her on the show and then sort of flip that revelation into, oh my gosh, we thought we were seeing one kind of story, but then we realized it's actually just the show that she's acting in, and it ended up being just one scene in her flashback story. But I think it was a very effective way to establish her character. And, you know, really from very early on in the show, we've always wanted to have this sort of actress who'd been, like, in Australia working on a syndicated show. Then Paula was her boyfriend. And, you know, it turned out sort of we were in this situation when we started the season. We had been very ambitious, and it's a little bit like going to the supermarket when you're really hungry and you buy, like, four things for dinner and you come home and you have one or two and, well, maybe you have three, but...
Maybe three, but one definitely is going to sit in the fridge for 3 months and you realize...
And they were the ones sitting in the fridge. I mean, after we'd done all those episodes of the others out there in cages, and, you know, by the time we got back for the Beach Peoples, like, do we really have time for Nikki and Paulo? And the answer was no.
Yeah, but did we have to bury them alive?
We did. It's funny. Because I remember very early on, and we talked about it with you guys, and the original idea had been to do an entire episode that was just expose the show. And the twist at the end would be, and what is the end of the teaser, which is, oh my god, Nikki is on a show. That cool idea stayed with us throughout the entire season until we finally got to the episode and found a way to work it into the story. But I think if we could do what we wanted to, we might have done a lot of explicit episodes.
Well, listen, we're not. It's not just that the three of us are big fans of expose. You know, Hurley's a big fan, and John Locke's a big fan, and Redacted.
And scene. All right. I think that does it for all of our corners. Does anybody else have any calm thoughts before we run to Josh?
What a great episode of Lost.
Indeed. Let's hear about it more with Joanna and Josh.
All right. We are thrilled to have back, returning to the podcast, Down the Hatch co-host Josh Wiggler. Hello. How are you?
I'm supposed to say razzle dazzle here, but I don't know if that is like a blanket, like, descriptor of how I'm feeling. It should be.
Maybe in quarantine is like razzle frickin' yeah. dazzle. Right now.
More like frazzled dazzle.
Oh, hearing. I see.
So let's talk about Nikki and Paolo. Yeah.
You mean Corvette, the Pride of St. Paul?
Sorry, yes, yes.
And Paolo, the Wolfgang Puck of Brazil?
He's an incredible... I mean, I guess I can't say he's an incredible chef, considering the only meal we ever see him cook... kills a man. So I guess we don't know. We don't know if he's actually very
good. I mean,
gifted.
I'm sure it tasted delicious going down.
What a way to go, right?
Yeah. With Rodrigo Santoro, like, preparing you a careful meal. Anyway, we're
I'd
here
be pretty
to talk
happy
about,
to die yeah. that way, personally. Of all the options that are, like, currently on the board, that's pretty high. I'll take it.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. And I'm glad you're here for a myriad of reasons, but one of them being you and I are both, like, you know, we both cover Westworld in a major way as yep. well. So it's fun to talk about a Rodrigo Santoro episode of Lost.
Without irony, called him Hector on our most recent podcast because Mike and I just got to their first appearance in Further Instructions the previous week, and he showed up and I was like, and so it's Nikki and Hector. Wow, okay. And it was totally slip of the tongue, but like, I see Rodrigo Santoro, I see Hector Escaton. I'm a simple man.
I see Xerxes. No, it's funny.
Oh, no.
It's funny because one of our listeners thought we, because we were saying Nikki and Paolo so quickly, and because you always say it in that order and like kind of slur it.
Yes.
She thought we were saying one name, Nikki Impala. Like, who is Nikki Impala? Yeah. So that's sort of all I call them in my heart now.
That's just incredible.
And honestly, in this episode, at one point, Sawyer says, rest in peace. And it really sounds like Nikki Impala.
Well, that would make sense because he's just learning who they are.
It's true.
That in his mind, he may just see one person. Maybe reminded of someone from his days on the crime beat of that dastardly Nikki Impalo, who was part of the Tampa job with Sawyer.
Exactly. I wanted to bring up one more expose, non-expose thing before we dive in, which is that we were alerted to the fact that there is a family rewatching Lost right now, and the matriarch of the family likes your podcast, and the daughter likes. Like, ooh, our podcast.
Man of science, and, man of faith. This is like, this is the epitome of what Lost is all about. Whose side are you on?
Cave or beach.
Wow. So
we've got a little podcast, interfamily podcast.
Little rivalry. I like it. Let's keep things spicy in 2020. We need a little drama these days.
Right. This but is good. I think, because things are too boring. So I think why not both?
Shrugging. It's the gif. Why not both? Yeah. I am right there. I'm right there with you. I have to say, before we get into anything, that I'm behind. We're further behind than you are in season three, and we are probably, I think, T minus four or I think about 4 or 5 weeks away from Stranger in a Strange Land, and I am so excited to get to it, not to rewatch the episode, but to finally sit down and listen to the Biling interview.
we had discussed it. I discussed it with you. I kept you apprised of like every twist and turn.
It made me so happy. Like in like a fairly low moment, it made me very, very happy to know that this was coming into reality. So I've got my listening on the horizon that I'm very, I'm very much sure, looking forward to.
I'm pretty sure I let Dave and Neil know Biling was coming on, and then immediately after, you were next on the list.
Yeah, you know, like, I need you know to me let well. Josh
that Biling is coming. Anyway, you know me well. We have neither Nikki nor Impala here. We have Josh instead to talk about expose. Josh, why did you want to come talk to me about expose?
Well, I mean, you said you want to talk to me about expose. I'm like, yes, absolutely yes. And honestly, Joanna, you could just tell me I want to talk to you about this episode of Lost, and I'll come on. So I'm ready and available. I'm a very easy get when it comes to Lost. But I love this episode. I love expose. I think expose is an elite episode of Lost. And I don't know if that's a spicy take anymore or if it's like almost like a cold take that expose is a really great episode of Lost. But I love this one. I think that this is one of the truly great television apology episodes. its whole mission statement is, yeah, we know, we get it. Here, we have to deal with it. We can't just like, you know, wave a magic wand and they're not on the show anymore. I suppose they could, but I think that would be weirder. So instead, let's lean into the curve and give you our best shot at a train wreck of an episode. And I think it's hysterical. I think it's got some like very legitimately good character moments too, I feel like. And I just love that we live in a universe where Happy Time Hurley, who had never heard a fly, buried people alive. you know, I think it falls under that umbrella of the Stephen King influences that this show wears. This feels very Kingian, the ending of this episode. So I just love it. I'm a big fan of expose. I don't know how you're all feeling on the podcast, but this is one of my favorites.
Oh no, we love it. We're like big expose fans. And like that's, you know, for people who are listening for the first time, that was obviously not the case when the episode aired. It was a spicy hot take if you liked expose. And I think we've been trying to sort of, process why, that was. I'm sure there are a number of reasons, but this episode coming just after last week's episode, which ends with a big like Locke cliffhanger and his dad's
right
on the island and what's
Magic
going
box.
On.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like so much like so mythologically dense. And then it's like BRB Nikki Impalo time. I can understand why people watching week to week were like stressed and pissed. But in a binge, It's a total joy, I find. And actually, every time I rewatch it, this is like, I don't know, my third or fourth time since starting the podcast, and I've been sort of like tooling through the episodes.
Yeah.
Like this time, like the last couple times, I'm like, this is a fun episode. What was everyone talking about? This time though, and I'll tell you the exact moment, it's during the plane crash scene when Rodrigo Santoro is like serving us like actual devastation shell shock.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm like,
yes.
Is this actually a great episode of Lost? Yeah. You know?
And the answer is yes. And the answer is yes. I know exactly that shot. Like Nikki has to like shake him out of it.
Right. Exactly.
And Rodrigo Santoro showing why he, is going to go on to play a character who can play multiple characters at the same time. You know, it's tough. These are, I actually think Keely Sanchez is really great as Nikki as well.
Same.
I think that she's very good in that role. And I think it's gotta be hard because the way that the legend goes, is that within the Lost writers' room, long before any of us laid eyes on Nikki and Paolo, they knew it wasn't working. And so, like, the construction of Exposé was allegedly before or shortly after we laid eyes on Nikki and Paolo. They knew that they had written themselves into this awful situation. I was talking with Mike about the characters as we were recording this week's podcast, because we're starting to get into Nikki and Paolo territory, and it really feels like Nikki and Paolo are the character embodiments of, like, some of the weird, bad subplots Lost was considering doing in the first season. Like, when you go and you read the series Bible, and there was, like, an episode that was going to be all about killer hornets and stuff like that. Like, thank God that's not what happened on our television screens, and Nikki and Paolo, you know, somehow passed through the membrane, and they made it onto Lost. They feel like they are the biggest mistakes character-wise on the show. And it's not a reflection of the actors. I think the actors are great. They're just given a really, really rough job of trying to integrate in a season when we're already being asked to get invested more in Desmond, who we know pretty well at the end of season two, but we don't like fully know. We're just getting to meet Benjamin Linus as Benjamin Linus this season. Juliet Burke is obviously a big deal this season. So we already have three major new presences on the show, and you're going to toss Nikki and Paolo onto it. It's just not going to work. So I have to imagine the conversations with them were tough. I got to imagine they didn't feel great about the material as they were going through it. And then when they're basically given, like, all right, well, here's your flashback episode, and also we're killing you in it. They're both so game the way that they play this.
Right.
I feel like they embrace sort of like the hamminess of this episode. I feel like they give us really human performances as Nikki and Paolo too. So I think they really make the best of the situation that they possibly can. And by they, I mean not only the actors, but really everybody involved. And it's a fun excuse to go and see a bunch of people who haven't been on the show in a long time, whether it's Ethan or Shannon and Boone. Anytime you get some Arst on you, I'm pretty happy. it's good. I think it's like a fun, like, alternate look at what was happening on Lost through these characters who everybody knows are bottom of the barrel. So let's just have fun with them one last time and say, I'm sorry for these people, and bury them alive and call it a day.
You talk about being game for something. That's how I also feel every time Maggie Grace and Ian Somerhalder come back.
Yes.
Because they were, you know, written off, you know, one of the biggest shows in the world, et cetera. And they're just sort of like, sure, we'll come back and do Shannon and Boone for you. And every time I'm just like, oh, every time I see them, I'm just like so excited to see Shannon and Boone again, to mention Ethan and Arst, et cetera. So yeah. And then like, and the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of it all. The like, let's see the famous Jack speech from a different point of view or whatever. It's incredibly fun. I think it's a really fun concept. And like, I think a mistake they might have made back in the day was they said something about like, you know, we have this big idea in mind and this is going to be the payoff of Nikki and Paolo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if they hadn't sold it that way and just been like, we have a fun idea and we're going to do it. Not like this will make Nikki and Paolo worth it, but just sort of like, hey, we have a fun idea. We're going to do it.
Totally. I think that a lot of the Lost hangups, you could assign to similar, sensations. Like, I feel like there's, I'm like, we got a plan for that. We've got an answer for that. Like, that's, right. it's gonna make a lot of sense. And I think, like, oftentimes when it was hyped up in that direction, maybe some of that stuff didn't always land, the way it had been hyped up to be. But it's also, you know, the advent of the Rockstar showrunners. So, you know, they're pioneering territory there and figuring out what you're supposed to say to hype things up when you're overhyping something. This is a learning experience for everybody, Lost.
Right. And I think, you know, Damon especially, given the other high profile projects that he's been involved with, has gotten so much more circumspect in sort of how he talks about what he's about to present.
Totally.
In that he's like, I understand that really lowering expectations is going to serve everyone the most right now.
Yeah.
Talking about like when they knew what they knew and when they decided how to do it, you know, Paolo coming out of the bathroom, that happens in The Cost of Living,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Episode five.
Yeah, episode five. So that's like so early. So they knew by when, like episode three, episode four, like, well, quickly.
I do wonder, like, do they know that yet? Do they know that they're not working, and do they know that they have to like kill them off in epic fashion at this point? Or is it because of stuff like Paolo coming out and becoming, as I believe the internet broad brushed him as, takes a shit guy? I think it was, I think the nickname was close to something like that, which is, how dare you? That's Rodrigo Santoro, sir. You know, I don't know if it's like, well, we're going to put him in the bathroom and we'll explain why in expose we've got a huge plan, or if it's like, we put him in the bathroom as a joke and no one laughed for the reasons we wanted them to laugh. We got to bury him alive. You know, I kind of love both versions, so I don't really mind either way.
It's true.
But I wonder what was their like great grand design for these characters if they were working? Was it some form of the diamonds becoming like a real piece of the show?
Or, you know, just the hope that everyone would fall in love with them. I mean, like, it's interesting because, you know, so, you know, to adopt your phrase, so the story goes, Nikki and Paolo were a reaction to fans griping, grousing that we don't know, you know, what's going on with the Scott right. Steves of the world, and can we get to know them a bit better? And they're like, sure. But like, I'm wondering, like, if there's a way to respond to that criticism, which like is the kind of criticism that they probably should have never responded to in the first place.
Totally.
But if they're going to respond to criticism like that, you know, what was a better way to do it? Was it to not go like with the like super, super hotties, which is like what they seem, you know, it feels to me like they tried to give us two more Sawyers or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
when we were like really thirsty for more of like the Ben type of person.
Yeah, I think,
right?
I think that of the new people that we have seen on the show since season one, you know, Mr. Echo is a character that pops, and he is island mystic magnificence, right? Ben is certainly bringing that energy. Desmond is, you know, time traveling Desmond now. So like, obviously, like he feels like foundationally tied to the mythology of the island. I feel like those are like, Libby was an interesting character for people because like, what's her deal? Why was she in the psych right. ward? And like, anytime that there was a character that you were introducing that felt like they were an integral part of the fabric, whether it's like the supernatural stuff or just like sort of the, everybody is sort of like destined to be bumping into each other stuff that we see, like the Sawyer being in the police station when Boone is in Australia type stuff. Those seem to be the things that pop, and Nikki and Paolo just don't come in with any of that. Maybe like part of the plan was like they had done something essential in the first couple of seasons that we hadn't seen, and they were going to flip that card over, and maybe that could have been fun. But I think that the way that they tried to introduce them as though they had just been here the entire time really fails when it's combined with the fact that they come off as like way too cool for any of this bullshit. You know, Nikki's first scene is chastising Hurley for not telling everybody that Jack's been kidnapped when Hurley was kidnapped. Hurley just got back from being kidnapped. So like literally the first thing you're doing is yelling at this recently kidnapped man for not telling you that people were kidnapped sooner. He couldn't have. He's telling you as soon as he possibly could. And so I don't think anyone, like, especially if you're pitting that against the most likable character on the show, in Hurley, I do think that's tough. That was a point that Mike was making last week, and I think he's right that I think that you're right that I think that their idea was like a couple of Sawyers, and I think what they wound up with instead was Boone and Shannon 2.0.
Exactly, which I think they knew, which is why they brought Boone and Shannon in for this episode so much. You know,
yeah, I think so too. I think when you look at the episode, I don't think it's coincidental that the episode references a lot of some of the more obvious Lost mistakes.
Correct.
Whether it's Boone and Shannon being really involved in the episode, you know, if it's, you know, a scene that takes place either during or very shortly after, whatever the case may be, you know, referencing the briefcase, that's an episode that people really don't care for. The fact that, the very maligned season two Charlie arc of him going so dark that he knocked Sun unconscious, comes home to roost in this one. I feel like this expose, you know, much like the title implies, I think is like a stop down to like do an autopsy on the way that Lost sometimes misfires. And I think they do it in a really brilliant way.
I think it is brilliant. It does feed into something that I've seen Damon do more than Carlton, which is the like really quick to mea culpa. And it's just sort of like sometimes you don't need to, like, it's okay. Sometimes you don't need to prostrate yourself to like every criticism. You know what I mean? But like, I think this is done in a really fun way.
Yeah.
I love that they address Dark Charlie. I love that they address, the gun case, because it's just sort of like Arse being like, I'm sorry, why do you guys get to decide what to do with guns?
Totally.
Was there an election I missed? Yes. I don't know. it's really solid.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is the story that the original introduction for Nikki and Paolo was to like interrupt them having sex in Sawyer's tent.
Yeah, they filmed that apparently.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why not? That would honestly, I think that would have been great.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a great introduction because that was another sort of critique of Lost is why aren't more people fucking on this island, right? To reference the Hall & Oates song. So, Garfunkel & Oates.
But Paolo like literally just like wakes up, I believe is how, and I mean, I guess that's a tried and true character introduction method on this show, but usually it's like we open on an eye. Paolo is just like taking a nap on a palm tree when they bring poor Mr. Echo back to the beach, and he just like, bring yourself back online, you know?
Yes, so it's
just
like,
you know, very, very quiet introduction of these characters. It's like, they've been here the whole time. What did you not watch seasons one and two? You know,
it was
strange.
I kind of feel like they should have had exactly what they have in this episode, which is Sawyer going like, who the hell is Nikki? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they needed that in the first introduction because like our first time watchers, and hopefully, you know, I don't want to speak for them too much, but I think that they have been mostly confused by Nikki and Paolo.
I imagine.
Not like angry the way that a lot of fans were back in the day, but just like what? And confused. And the other thing that I found is really interesting, in this rewatch is actually how little Nikki and Paolo there actually is before they die.
Yeah.
Like that they, you know, they're this joke of Lost of how annoying they were, but I'm like, honestly, they're barely there before they're gone.
Do they do much with them past like the first six episode pod? Cause I feel
not
like they're
really,
you know, they're there in further instructions. Paolo's in Every Man for Himself. I know that they're going to be, you know, at the Mr. Echo funeral and they're going to the Pearl Station and everything, but I'm trying to think past Echo's funeral, what role Nikki and Paolo have until expose. And I'm struggling.
It's really not much at all, honestly. And so
that must
I think
be
they
where
were
they're like, oh, this didn't work. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, can they quietly go for a morning swim like Joanna? Right. No? Right. Okay.
But yes, please. That would be fine. Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk to you about actually my favorite part of this episode that I did not find out until like our hardcore listeners alerted me to this, which is that the spiders that come for Nikki are actually not spiders, but the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, when some of our listeners first raised this to me, I was like, I'm sure that's something that like Damon and Carlton said flippantly on the podcast and or on a panel, and it was a joke. And they were like, sure. Yeah, the spiders are the monster, whatever. However, as you may already know, you can hear the smoke monster, the old clickety clack chittering sound as Nikki spider, not Paolo spider, but Nikki spiders emerge out of the underbrush. How do you feel? About spider, I mean, I know we're not allowed to talk about like bigger picture monster stuff, but like the spiders being the monster. Did you always know this? Like, what are your thoughts and feelings around this?
I don't know if it was like first run stuff for me. It's certainly been my interpretation of it for, you know, having the benefit of watching, you know, more of the show than the first time viewers. And I am trying to be careful here because it's hard to talk about from that standpoint. Other than to say that, like, if the monster is a security system, as Danielle Russo says, then, like, he's on red alert because the most annoying people on the planet have washed up on his beach. And he's really got to take an opportunity to take care of this thing. So I think that works. I think one of the things that I like about that is we're kind of left by the end of the episode with, like, no one really knows what happened to Nikki and Paolo. You know, it seems clear that they killed each other over diamonds, and that is like sort of where everybody leaves it. But they don't know that they didn't actually kill them, each other. They don't know that they are actually the people who are burying Nikki and Paolo are the ones who are killing these people. And they don't know a thing about the monster's involvement in that. I like that expose kind of is just sort of, It's just very open in that way. I think in the same way that, like, I understand if somebody doesn't care for this episode, I would argue that that person probably hasn't watched it recently would be my first thought.
Right.
And then if you still don't like it, then it's just not your thing. But I think it is to that point that you made earlier of, wow, Nikki and Paolo were so annoying, but they actually, you know, they're broad brushed, quite often because they shouldn't have been there in the first place, but their exit episode is actually a blast. So I think to have there be like sort of this room for interpretation, even in like the mechanism with which they die, I think is pretty fun. But for me and like knowing a bit more about the smoky McSmokerston, I think that's really satisfying. I think that there's a lot there. There's a lot of meat on that bone.
The other question that some of our listeners raised was, I mean, is a reason to get rid of Paolo specifically because he was just too good at discovering things. Like the fact that he got down a hatch before John even opened his or knew who Ben was way before anyone else on the beach did. And of course did not share that information. That would have been helpful. But like, would Paolo have figured everything on the island out by like the end of season three? And then
if
you're
he
like,
was just like, yeah, I don't know if he wasn't like so concerned about his golf game, or I guess like, you know, the island chose not to like completely cure his nicotine addiction. Maybe, I don't know. Like
he had a lot
going on. But yeah, if he wasn't so distracted with the diamond stuff, I think that he would have. He would have swam out to Hydra Island. We were like, oh, what's all this? He would have figured out the polar bear cages even quicker than Sawyer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No time at all. It does make you wonder, you know, what kind of untapped talent was in the rest of the 815 crew other than the main characters that we have. It's like, were there other people that you should have tapped to inspire more to go on some of these Jungle Crusades. Maybe you were leaning on, you were overexerting too many of the same people over and over again.
Absolutely.
How many other Nikki and Paolos were there out there?
I know. Like, if Joanna had not gone for that swim, I am confident that she would have been the star.
It is really wild that Paolo finds, goes inside of a hatch before John Locke does.
Yeah, like, Boone didn't have to die,
no,
in theory.
He really didn't, did he? No.
Paolo was already, and Paolo, I love how Paolo's like, oh, I'm not going up there. That plane right
no
there.
Way. No,
no
way.
No.
And
no,
Paolo
no, no.
overhears the whole Ben Linus plan.
Yeah.
You know, if Paolo
the
was-
The Michael plan, like,
yeah,
everything.
He could have warned a lot of people about a lot of shit. Anna Lucia's death is squarely on Paolo.
I say Boone's death, Anna Lucia's death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who else would Paolo kill given the opportunity?
He got what was coming to him in a big
Paolo
way.
Lies,
yeah, Paolo
or
lies.
Actually withholds information.
Who
so,
lies
yeah.
by omission.
Yeah. Is there any other, you say this is like a great example of like an apology episode. Do you have other examples of the genre that come to mind? That's a tough prompt, but
yeah,
I'm just curious.
I'm trying to think of anything that, you know, I think... Nothing really comes immediately to mind, and if something does, I will circle back to it. But I think that it does feel like, even though this is a Kitsis and Horowitz joint, what you had said earlier about Damon being quicker to the mea culpa than Carlton, like this feels very Damon Lindelof, this episode. And I think like, it, you know, he very wisely retired from the Twitter game a long time ago, has been amazing on Instagram.
So good.
A really, really great follow. But I think that when he has, whether consciously or unconsciously, channeled a lot of his creator's angst into his material, that I often feel like that yields really worthwhile stuff. And I think... you know, as one of the leaders of this room, at the very least, I feel like this episode, it smells like there's a good amount of Damon in here. And as he's, you know, one of my all time favorite TV creators, mm-hmm. bar none, I really like that when he pours that into, I think like in many ways, the way he talked about The Leftovers, but the way he presented The Leftovers feels very much like, not that like the whole thing is a direct response to Lost, but it's in conversation with Lost. It's in conversation with, some of the ways in which Lost got caught in traps, got caught in nets, you know, allowed itself to get buried alive at certain points. So I think Exposé is kind of to me like a really early example of that kind of creative behavior,
right.
from Lindelof. So I wish I had a better example of like a great apology letter of an episode. I'll tell you, if Game of Thrones wants to come back with like a bonus episode that is just like, hey, I'm sorry about how all of that went down, I'll watch it. But I don't know. I don't know if one immediately comes straight to mind.
Okay, let's leave it buried. Let the past die, kill it if you must. All right, Josh, if folks want to hear you talk more about Lost, and why wouldn't they, where can they find you?
Hey, we are Down the Hatch. We're Down the Hatch is the podcast name. There's another Down the Hatch podcast that I think is about swallowing stuff. We're not that one. We're the Lost Down the Hatch. We're on the Post Show Recaps Network. You can check that out. I tweet the links at Round Howard. Come for the Lost recaps. Stay for me, not being able to stop talking about how I'm obsessed with Animal Crossing and I've been turning my Animal Crossing island into a sequel to Lost.
That's all we want in the world is a sequel to Lost.
I've created it for myself and if I'm not working, I'm just sunk into my Nintendo Switch running around as the smoke monster in Animal Crossing.
That's a beautiful place to be,
It's all considering the alternatives of where I could be right now. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
All right, Josh, thank you so much for razzle-dazzling me.
Oh, Billy D. Williams is so great too. It's just, the Exposé is a great time. It's a great time.
All right, so someone tweeted at me that they recognize the reference that I was making whenever I start off this segment of the podcast. So I will, in honor of that person who tweeted me, I will do the real reference that I'm referencing and say, now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. We would like to thank our Small Council Patreon subscribers, starting with some newbies. We've got Lauren Hunter, Laura Fairbanks, Sam, Danielle Wilkinson, Anja Susan Sandness, Diana Fisher, Sam Williams, Delia Vosh, Beth Weingarner, Mike Harris, Matthew Wilson, Joe Garfine, Grayson Owen, Rachel Simon, Guava Corvallis, Thomas Hatfield, Frank Perinello, Emily Ann, Lauren Adams, and Heather Carpenter.
And I would like to add to those thanks Caleb McKee, Catherine, Miriam, Aaron Shelley, Christy Rice, Jillian Walsh, Catherine, Stephanie Berman, Sarah Trites, Aaron Gowork, Aaron Gowork, Paula Silva, Nate, Lulu, which is also a cool Dungeons and Dragons character in Descent into Avernus. Good job, Lulu. Allison Heishman, Andrew Bird, Kelsey Lee Measure, Alex, Matt Pilari, Peter Hobson, and Lisa Romney. Thank you very much.
And I would like to thank the following fine humans: Lawrence Medina, Serafina Cobain, Justin Way, Aubrey, Lorenzo Ciandra, Dave L., Michelle Boucher, Amy Schreiner-Thomas, Shannon Como, Rachel, Scott McNeil, Monica Wolf, Chris, Jesse Baird, Fainting Violent, Andrea Rodriguez-Garcia, Lindsay Mitchell Ernesty? Yeah, I think I got it. Josh Kaluza, Lex Gernon, and Ryan James. Thank you all very much for being members of the Small Council.
And we are back for the storm. Lock antagonist check-in miscorrectly identifies that high tide would be in winter below the equator.
Okay.
So therefore,
but he
makes
does
boom.
Say,
go ahead.
He does say winter is coming.
He does say,
which
winter
I think
is
a great lost Easter egg for our podcast.
Yeah, no, I don't think I would have noticed that why he noticed the tide was doing anything if I weren't primed to hear winter is coming when anybody says it. Thank you, Game of Thrones. But that's basically all Locke does that I would classify as antagonist. Although I'm kind of sad that we didn't get some slightly more antagonist moments or even like a little funny Locke moment. So as a way of getting into the storm before we talk about other stuff in Exposé, what scene would you guys know, knowing the plot of the entirety of Lost, would you have added to this episode? I'm thinking, like, even though the Calmies know about this already, just like started off, like Paolo has to pee and he has to do it far away from the kitchen because Nikki is like, you know, yeah, why don't you just go to that bathroom? And he's like, I can't, the plane's covered the bathroom. Or he doesn't tell her that, but obviously he can't. So he goes off and he pees in the jungle and he just sees Rousseau stalking and she gives him the shh, quiet finger and then just keeps moving on.
Quiet finger. Honestly, I can't remember if I was joking with Josh about this in our spoiler section or not, but like, I mean, I feel like Paolo was so far ahead of everyone else that I feel like Paolo would have like found the cave with a golden light by the end of season three. But a scene we've already seen that I would put Paolo in. That's tricky.
I got one.
Okay, hit me.
All right, so imagine it's out in the woods. Paolo's walking by himself. He's looking for the diamonds. He hears a rustling, and he turns, and he sees, and it's Henry Gale in all wrapped up in a net. And they have, like, a 30-second look, and then he just keeps walking. And then whoever finds Henry Gale, who is it that actually finds him?
Saeed.
And then, yeah, like Saeed rolls up like 10 seconds later.
Oh.
Like Paolo was just there.
He's very good. At first, Saeed mentioned this episode.
He's very good.
Very good.
I want him to be involved in the Henry Gale capture somehow. Like, he, like, maybe Ben went out and he didn't intend to get caught, but like Paolo tripped over a rope and accidentally snagged Ben or something.
He steals some of Sawyer's porn and finds Jacob's cabin and breaks the ash circle and doesn't even realize it.
Or he's been hanging out with Mikhail.
I want to see. I don't know how this would work. I think he would see him, but if he doesn't, I would like Paolo to stumble across Jack having a really emotional conversation with his dad / the thin air. Maybe. What is this whole daddy issue thing I've stumbled to? I don't know. Or when they pull Boone out of the wood, like, we find out how Boone died, and he, like, turns to Nikki. He's like, I told you. that plane was going to fall.
Or, like, I want one where it's just, like, Paolo's sitting there, and he's, like, distraught because he can't find his Russian doll. And he's just sort of sitting on a rock, and, like, way in the distance, you see just, like, the smoke monster pop its head out of the ground and sort of look at him and then just go away.
I will say, Time Jump season really lost the opportunity to put a Nikki and Paolo in the background somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
When they're like wandering around, they see Claire giving birth and stuff like that.
Yep. But never Paolo discovering the... John sees Paolo discover the pearl before him, and he's like, motherfucker, and then just gets blinked out.
That would be so funny. All right, we have some complicated things to talk about, actually, surprisingly, in this episode. Okay, we didn't talk about it in the calm, though we could have, because... So technically, the spiders that kill Nikki, or paralyze Nikki, are the smoke monster.
Allegedly, that has been
both confirmed by Lindelof and Cuse, and then I was like, well, surely they were joking. But if you watch the episode, you hear the smoke monster sound as not the spider she throws at Paolo, but the Nikki spiders come out of the jungle.
Yeah, clickety clack.
Yeah, so the spiders are the smoke monster. And so I have a lot of questions about this. So, like, here's a couple questions. Number one, also, is it worth knowing that Nikki, at least, because Nikki's last name is Fernandez, Nikki, at least, was a candidate at one point, because her last name's on the cave wall and crossed out. So...
They didn't even get the right choice between Nikki
and
Paolo. It's like, who's actually kind of good and who sucks so hard?
Well, Paolo might be up there. We just don't know his last name, so we don't know it would be. But, like, so at least Nikki, if not Nikki and Paolo, were candidates at some point, and they were either crossed out because they suck, or they were crossed out because they died. Unclear.
He can't kill candidates.
Well, right, but don't let me finish, Dave Gonzalez. The old clickety-clack doesn't kill Nikki. He paralyzes Nikki. And we could argue that Sawyer and Hurley are the ones that kill Nikki and Paolo, right?
Sure. I would also believe that, like, okay, so I get it. They're saying that, like, the spiders are actually some sort of manifestation of the smoke monster. But it doesn't even need to be that complicated. It's like, can the smoke monster commune with the jungle? Because those spiders are already in the jungle.
Or is he impersonating the spiders the way he impersonated Kristen Shepherd? Has he split himself into a little spider army?
Is it like a physical power that the smoke monster has, or is it electromagnetic control of humans?
And Josh's theory was that there's just like a pile of dead spiders somewhere in the jungle, right? Because like it's like dead people who are on the island that the smoke monster appears as. I mean, that's complicated by like some various things like horses and stuff like that. But like,
sure.
Anyway, I just think that is a hilarious, like, wrench in the midst of this light and breezy episode that means nothing. Oh, except the spiders are the smoke monster. What?
I mean,
for no reason just decides to take two Losties out of the running.
Well, he only takes Nikki out because the first one in the gif jar, that's a real Medusa spider. It's only Nikki's spiders that are the smoke monster.
Mm. And it's, I guess we're supposed to read that as her, like, immediate punishment for what she did to Paolo.
Right. And that's when we need to think about whether or not expose is another one of those synecdoches of the larger Lost thing, because it's like, you come to the island, you have a chance for a fresh start, but Nikki is just, like, up to her old shit again. And Paolo too, to a less, like, murderous extent, but like, it's not that Nikki is gonna kill Paolo, but she's just like, I'm gonna do horrible things to you while you're paralyzed. Like, she's not great. So like, she came to the island, she could have been like, I know we've straight up murdered a dude and stole his diamonds, but let's just enjoy each other because we're super hot and we're on an island, and let's just like start anew. And they decide to not.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and you get the moment at the end where Sawyer puts the diamonds in when he says, rest in peace, Nikki and Paolo.
Right.
He buries the diamonds too. So it's more of a, you know, we're realizing something that Sawyer is learning, I guess, in that thing where it's like, we really are in the wild, and none of these possessions matter.
What do you think, Dave? Is that your smoke monster spider sound?
Yeah. The only reason I would hesitate to think that they're still candidates and that the smoke monster found a loophole of not killing them but paralyzing them is,
why didn't he just spider attack everyone?
Well, I mean, I guess that is the loophole that he finds with Jacob. Because basically his whole thing is he needs to find a loophole to kill Jacob. And it would make me feel better about the circular nature of Lost if this was his test to see if he could convince, like, if he could quote-unquote break the rules by getting somebody else to kill it, and it worked. That sounds interesting to me from a mythology perspective, but then it also means that the Man in Black's playing a 3-season long game from here on out, even though he discovers the loophole in this episode. But I guess the monster does pop up next episode, so it's not completely out of... you're talking me into it. You're talking me into it slowly.
I mean, I'm not really invested in any of this. I have no case horse in this race. Like, I don't care if, like, I just think it's, I just feel like at this point, it's actually, I think, a little irresponsible. I think they didn't think it through the same way they didn't think case horse or not irresponsible. That's the wrong word. But like, I feel like they didn't have all their ducks in a row in terms of like the smoke monster and what it could and couldn't do. So they're like, spiders.
Well, it's also weird because they made up a spider. Like, there isn't a Medusa spider, so it's like you already made up the perfect way out of your situation. It has a strong pheromone. Art says it. He smashes it, which releases the pheromone. Yada yada. Like, there you go. You got science. But they do the made up spider and the smoke monster, which is like a hat on the hat.
I never, until this watch and our listeners were talking about it in the like Storm channel that we have on our Slack, I never knew that the spiders were supposed to be the smoke monster. And once I saw them talking about it, then I watched the episode and I heard the smoke monster noise and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. In our live watch, I wrote clickety clack and nobody else said anything. And I was like, oh no, did I just spoil Lost for people?
But I think it's just so, I mean, it's very subtle, but I just think it's so wild that it's like, why would anyone be on the lookout for that audio? You know what I mean?
It's almost like they started taking that audio and just stick it in a couple weird places just in case you need it later. We need an explanation for this later. Oh, smoke monster sounds.
Oh, the mangoes? That was a smoke monster.
Yeah, smoke monster. He's doing it. I mean, that is kind of what seems to be true in the long arc of Lost, is that they really didn't know exactly what it was kind of all the way to the end.
Well, you know, I mean, like, at least it wasn't
the
Whisperers.
They never really figured it out.
If it was the Whisperers, you know? It would be like, what the fuck? Like, because that makes no sense. So, you know, the malicious monster force becoming the spiders is a certain type of sense.
Personally, always liked it as just a security system, and I thought it was weird that it becomes like the Man in Black later. But we'll get to that.
Oh, will we?
All right, since you guys haven't been obsessively rewatching Lost as we do this podcast, which is better for your life, probably. Do you recall when Nikki and Paolo come back in any kind of meaningful way in the show?
Paolo never does.
right?
I don't think Paolo ever does. Is Nikki in the sideways a little bit?
It's probably unfair to say meaningful. Keely Sanchez and Rodrigo Santoro never come back, as far as I know. In a later season, it's the final season, I'm pretty sure, and it's when, like, Ilana and, like, all they're all on the beach in the original encampment, and they're talking about money. Ben is, I think, trying to bribe Miles. And Miles is like, I don't need money. There's a pair of jabronis named Nikki and Paolo buried with a whole bunch of diamonds right
there. Oh, yeah, because he can talk to the dead.
Yeah, because Miles can commune with the dead. So, and what I love about that, I mean, I've always loved that moment, but what I didn't realize until this rewatch is that he says jabronis, which is just funny, but it's what Sawyer also calls them jabronis. And I think those are the two unique uses of the word jabroni. Both in relation to Nikki and Paolo, Sawyer and Miles, our cop buddies, both say it. So I think that's a fun little thing that happens later. Jabronis. And then should we talk about Charlie? Right? Because the reason, you know, what Dave said in the calm was like, Sun unravels the thing. She does nothing actively investigative. Charlie just confesses what he did. And this seems like an attempt to further... get us to sympathize with Charlie as we lead up to his death.
To finally undo the baby stealing. They're finally working on it.
How's it working for you guys?
I actually think pretty well, mostly because the way they structured this thing where Desmond tells Charlie that I'm saving you from your own death, there's also this element where it's like Charlie is probably going through it right now. And so like, he's like doing this sort of like a men's tour. And so you could see someone knowing of their impending doom naturally wanting to like reach out and like apologize. So he sort of picked a weird spot with Sun, but I kind of like it for Charlie's progression as a character, as someone who's like, he had an episode with Hurley where he needed to learn how to, you know, just pick himself back up a little bit and have some fun. And now he's having this episode, this little moment with Sun where he's like apologizing. I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good late stage character development for a character who, as we know here in the storm, is not long for this particular world.
Dave, what do you think?
I like how it's used in this episode, because if you're going to need to do this with Charlie, it's important. But also, Charlie's much easier to take now that he's become part of this resigned team of people who know Charlie's going to die. And this episode, they get to solve a murder mystery, sort of. They don't solve it. But
they actually do the murder.
Yeah, him being there... as sort of like a side plot, made me, you know, enjoy the detectiving of it all. And then him finally telling Sun, I see why it needs to be done. I don't actually like why it was done, because I think the scene doesn't do a lot to hold him accountable to the apology, which is part of actual apologies. So like, he says, like, you know, I was feeling bad because Locke punched me in front of everybody. I'm like, well, I did Locke punch you, do you think? Like, go take one more step back, Charlie. Take one step backwards. Think about that time you tried to baptize a baby in the ocean by stealing it against his mother's wishes. I feel like a mention of that would have been worthwhile, but Joanna, you're completely right about why they're doing it and why they're doing it here. And because of those two things, that's why they don't mention the baby. Because they're assuming we've all forgotten the baby, because the audience, for the audience, it's been, what, like 7 months since they actually saw that happen? So it works really well on TV and really well in this episode. Overall, does it work perfectly? No, but it's because, you know, we're doing a rewatch and we're not going to let Charlie forget he stole a baby.
We will hold Charlie accountable.
That's right.
The North remembers. all right. Is there anything else? Oh, we got a couple emails that I just want to run through really quickly. So the rest of Kate's email goes like this. She said some nice stuff about how she likes the podcast. Thanks, Kate. That's nice. One last anecdote. We watched the Lost finale in real time, and I cried my way through it, doing equal measures to saying goodbye to the characters I loved and Michael Giacchino's superb score. The following day, my boss gave me his tickets to a Cleveland MLB game, which was all well and good, but at some point later in the game, the score from the final scenes of Lost started playing, and on the Jumbotron was a shot-for-shot remake of those scenes with Slider, Cleveland's mascot, as Jack, Ketchup, a mascot-style hot dog that runs races every game against Mustard and Onion, as Vincent, and a bunch of interns and random humans as the rest of the group in the church. It was so out of left field, pun intended, and so weirdly perfect. And I found myself crying in public in the middle of a baseball game. I've tried in vain to find video of this or literally anyone else aside from my husband who remembers it happening, but it sometimes feels like I made it up because it makes absolutely no sense that they did this in less than 24 hours and they thought it was the perfect inning break entertainment as opposed to a Deal or No Deal ripoff or the like. So, if you, listener, were at a Cleveland MLB game and saw Slider and Ketchup... reenacting Jack and Vincent in the bamboo fields, I suppose. I would like to know about it.
Shout out to Cleveland. That is some Cleveland shit.
And here's the email from Felix. It's sort of like a book club email with some spoilers, so you know I love that. All right, so one of my favorite books is The Third Policeman by Flann O'Brien, a book that has obvious and confirmed connections to the Lost universe, and especially this episode being The Man from Tallahassee. Felix wrote this in response to last week's episode. The following contains spoilers for Lost-relevant book, The Third Policeman by Flann O'Brien. Maybe the spoilers are really just for the book, and I could have read this in the com. Oh, well. The book is a surrealistic, absurdist, dark comedy novel written in the 1930s about a man's journey through a zany, comical, and frankly horrified landscape of two-dimensional houses, impossible musical instruments, immortal policemen, and bicycles. Lots of bicycles. This place is the afterlife, and the protagonist is being punished of sorts for his acts while he was alive. Contained in this afterlife is the literal beyond or heaven, which in this case is accessed through a lift that goes way down through a shaft in the ground and contains a maze-like world of rooms and chambers which can produce anything a person desires. The catch is that the lift you enter through will insta-kill you if you weigh any more than you did when you entered, so nothing produced by the magical rooms down there can ever be brought back to the surface world, crushing all hope, enthusiasm, and possibility for salvation. There is also a literal mystery box that serves as the protagonist's chief object of affection and raison d'etre throughout the book. The internal logic, the mood, and the occasional surrealism of this book makes this very much required reading for fans of Lost, in my opinion. I'm 100% positive that Joanna would love this book if she hasn't already read it. It's quite short, too, which is nice. This book is also spotted on Desmond's shelf or nightstand at some point, if I'm not mistaken. Apologies if my English is a bit shit. Felix from Oslo, Norway. Great. No complaints about your English, Felix. I have not read The Third Policeman. I've read At Swim Two Birds, which is also by Flann O'Brien, which is similarly surrealistic and very good. I remember The Third Policeman being like this big thing that Lost fans were rabid for because I was working at an antiquarian bookshop when that episode that you see the book in the show aired. And we had like a run on The Third Policeman. Like Lost fans were coming in droves to buy it. So it might be fun. Maybe I'll do that as like one of our Patreon book club picks to read The Third Policeman. That might be fun. So do you guys have any thoughts or feelings about that?
No, but now I want to read
it. Yeah, it sounds interesting.
So I might read it.
And then this last email comes from Matthew, and this is a response to our conversation about when the island moves or doesn't move that we talked about last week. And Matthew, who knows more about Lost than any three of us will ever forget, writes, "Hi, host, just a few thoughts on the island moving as discussed in last week's pod. My impression is that the island is always moving, but gradually drifting. That's why the tides are observed to be wrong in season one. It's only when the frozen donkey wheel is turned that it jumps suddenly to a new location. As for the island becoming visible at the end of season two, I don't think that's due to the island moving. I think that's because the electric magnetic energy under the Swan was responsible for shielding the island. So when that was destroyed, the island could be observed." So that's Matthew's thoughts on the island moving. I like the idea of the island just kind of like vaguely drifting. So it's hard to find.
Just hanging around. Just like a big old lion turtle.
I was about to say, like, a lion turtle. Korra, Avatar. All right. Is there anything else we want to say that's Stormy?
No, I don't think so. Like, a slight storm episode of Lost after last week. And then next week, I don't remember. It's, well, I guess not. Neil, what's happening next week?
Next week is Left Behind. It's a Kate episode. The only thing I really remember about it is that it's the Kate and Cassidy episode.
Ooh, oh my God. So. No. Okay. One of our listeners posted, do yourself a solid. If you've seen this episode already in your life, go watch the promo for Left Behind, which is like on YouTube. It is one of the most misogynistic things I've ever seen, because it is like Kate versus Juliet Rumble in the Jungle. Like, it's so fucking stupid. God. I love that episode. Cassidy and Kate, Kate and Juliet. It's a great episode, but that fire the ABC promo department for that, for that ad.
The girls are going to fight in the jungle.
Oh, they both like Jack, and they want to fight in the rain.
We have a love triangle.
Well, we're definitely showing up next week for that. So until then, where can people find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Joanna Robinson.
You can listen to me talk about the second episode of Truth Versus Hollywood that is about Munich, is airing this Friday. So if you want to hear us wrap up Munich, you can listen to Truth Versus Hollywood, my podcast with Dave Chen, where we talk about movies that are based on real life events. Otherwise, you can just find me on Twitter.com. Pretty soon I'll be back on VanityFair.com, but not yet. Not yet.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. You can get me on Twitter at rejects at One Perfect Shot. Which,
hey, Neil, is
having
there anything,
an exciting week.
Yeah, is there anything going on with One Perfect Shot right now?
We're going to make it into a TV show.
With whomst?
With Ava DuVernay.
Oh, ooh. I've heard of her.
It's very exciting. I'm terrible at expressing excitement, but I assure you, on the inside, I am exploding with glee.
We're it's really proud of you. We're proud of you, bud.
Happy to have the secret out. And yes, stay tuned to at One Perfect Shot for more as that thing becomes a real thing.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we talk about other pop culture. And here, every week, watching Lost, telling you that falling down is very dangerous for your health. You shouldn't do it. And if you consciously think about it, it's actually easier to not fall down. So please don't fall down. We'll see you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.